live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, Enrique Bravo will preview this weekend's presentation of Oleana from David Mamet. We'll also learn how to become a Boys Run coach to encourage value building, working together, and community participation. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute will highlight this weekend's bronze house post raising at the Walter Soboloff Building. And the KTOO Newsroom will help analyze Tuesday's, that's yesterday's, election results. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more coming up right here on a Juno afternoon. Quick look at weather. Widespread rain showers for the rest of today with highs around 60, and tomorrow, Thursday, scattered rain with highs around 60. National native news is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A community meeting was held on the Hoopa Indian Reservation in California Tuesday to update people on the Mill Creek fire. Tribal and health officials are concerned about air quality and safety. As of Tuesday night, the fire was at more than 1,200 acres. Other fires in the northwest are contributing to the smoke. Crews are containing the Mill Creek blaze. The fire has put some restrictions on air and highway traffic. The Mill Creek fire was caused by arson on tribal lands near Hoopa, California. Authorities are offering a cash reward for information. Prosecutors in North Dakota have dropped all serious charges against Chase Iron Eyes in a case attorneys are calling a victory for water protectors of Standing Rock. Iron Eyes, an attorney and a former congressional candidate, was arrested and charged in February 2017 during actions against the Dakota Access Pipeline. He faced 6 years in prison for criminal trespass and incitement of a riot. Under a plea agreement, the state reduced the charges to disorderly conduct, and Iron Eyes will face no jail or risk penalties to his law license. Iron Eyes and his attorney say the arrest happened on treaty land never ceded by the Sioux tribe. In a statement released by the Lakota People's Law Project, Iron Eyes said it's impossible to trespass on treaty land. Iron Eyes was a high-profile case of Standing Rock. There were more than 800 state cases and a number of federal cases. According to the Water Protector Legal Collective, a group formed to assist people arrested at Standing Rock, as of August 17th, there were more than 100 state cases ongoing. Iron Eyes's agreement was pending final approval on Tuesday. Meanwhile, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is preparing for an official homecoming and Lakota naming ceremony for professional basketball player Kyrie Irving. The Celtic star has a family connection to Standing Rock. His late mother was adopted out of the tribe as a child. According to the tribe, Irving has long known about his heritage. He's said to have supported the No Dapple movement, has a tattoo of the tribal logo on his neck, and recently released a Nike N7 shoe honoring water and the tribe. Danielle Finn is the external affairs director of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. She says Irving's agent has expressed the athlete really wants to embrace his native heritage rather than make Thursday's visit a public appearance.
So he's really there to immerse himself in the culture, connect with his roots, and be home. So he very much wants to take time and have his memorable experience in the naming ceremony while also enjoying cultural performances of young students and children performing songs and dancing, and that's kind of what they want to focus on.
Finn says Irving's Lakota name is not public yet.
I'm under the strictest confidentiality. They did find his name just yesterday. So it's actually, again, traditionally in Lakota, they pick a name from the past of the family. Your first name is a name that usually was in the family somewhere. And so I can tell you that his name is coming from somewhere in the past, and it has been a name from his ancestors.
Finn says, similar to other Native nations across the country, having a family connection to your tribe, family, and community is highly important. And she says the tribe hopes after the basketball star's visit, other descendants and those separated from Standing Rock will come home and reconnect. The Reno Gazette Journal reports a Nevada tribe has banned car washes on tribal land during the upcoming nearby Burning Man event due to water concerns. The Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribal Council banned hand car washes along the road by tribal members, which are typically lower than washes in the Reno Sparks and surrounding area. The council says its water system is at near capacity, so the car washes are prohibited until further notice. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by Freedom Lodge, presenting Body and Earth, the future of Native wellness, with leaders including Chief Arvo Looking Horse, sharing wisdom which protects our lives and lands, September 12th through the 15th, Mystic Lake Casino. Registration through September 12th at bodyandearth.org.
And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at sanofsky.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. My first guest today is the great Enrique Bravo. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. Well, for the very few out there who don't know who you are and what you do, you're here representing Perseverance Theater. Tell us a bit about what you do there.
I'm the actor in residence. I also, I was the former director of education, but now I'm sort of moved into sort of some more artistic roles. Right now I run the Black Box Theater, which is the Phoenix. So our intention is to do two shows there, a sort of calendar season. And so this is, I'm here sort of plugging for the first show, which I was the director for.
Yeah, you're here to tell us about Oleana, which opens tomorrow at Perseverance Theater.
Correct. It opens this weekend, and yeah, it's Thursday through Sunday with a Sunday matinee. All the rest of the shows are at 7:30.
So can you tell us a little bit about what it is?
What's it about? It's a pretty controversial play. It came out in the 90s. It's by David Mamet, and he has you either love him or you hate him. He's got some very unique views. Like, he does not like any talkbacks after a show. He's got very specific rules as to how he goes about things. He's also been accused of being sort of very masculine. A lot of his plays are like that. But that's also sort of what this play in particular deals with, some sort of sexual harassment. And that's sort of the show starts off with a professor and a student. The professor is about to get tenure, and he's trying to close in a house. And the student comes in wanting to sort of know what's going on, like as far as her grade's concerned, because she's having problems. And so they get into a conversation that brings up a lot of things, emotions, that seems like they work through it. And then the second act comes with her basically, you realize that she's filed a formal complaint with the tenure committee, and it has to do with sexual harassment. And so it causes you to sort of focus on the things that you just saw in Act One, and what was innocuous, what wasn't, what are some things that sort of, especially me being a man, that you can sort of not think of completely through sometimes, that seem to be, you know, something you just say in passing or would do, but really can come across as, you know, very sexist or elitist. Especially in John's point of view, it's very elitist. He's very entitled. So it kind of examines all those conversations. And my hope was to sort of really get behind the Carol side, because she's got some very good arguments during this play, and to show sort of her side.
Yeah, well, how many times does it happen in real life with two people walk away from a conversation with completely different interpretations of what transpired?
Right.
And I haven't seen the play, of course, yet, but I've read up on it a little bit, and it sounds like it gets pretty intense, especially towards the end.
It does. There's a lot of, I don't want to give anything away, but it definitely gets more and more heated, and there's more and more misunderstandings. But there's also things that I think, like I said, people sort of take for granted how, you know, trying to figure people out sometimes. And I've dealt with it a little bit racially is the best way I can describe it. It's like where sometimes I have to, you know, cipher through whether somebody's being racist or ignorant, you know. are they just not aware that they're, like, saying this thing that's really kind of can come off one way? Or are they actually doing it in a, you know, in a mean-spirited way? And sort of sometimes you have to filter through that. I think those are some of the things that I sort of draw on to kind of create those lines.
it can be difficult too when it somehow sort of becomes your job to decide, like, are they being offensive?
Right, exactly.
Are they being ignorant?
It puts you in that position.
Now I have to come up with a response. Is it a microaggression? That's a whole other area. So as a woman, I understand that pretty well too.
That's what's been great to explore with this cast, because we sat down and I really told them what I wanted to sort of get out of this, and they really were on board. Brian Crowder and Erica Berggren, we had some really great conversations that came out of this, and I'm hoping to get some good responses out of it, as far as like giving this conversation a platform in order to sort of dissect and talk about. So that's what I love about theater, it allows you to do that.
And you directed this production, and it was your first time directing something like this.
Yes, first time directing in Juno. I've directed before, but it was a while ago. For the most part, I've been here, and I do direct stuff at the Canvas. But those are usually devised pieces that we sort of come up with together. This is the first time I've an actual piece. And there was a lot of things about it that I really liked, just because it does bring up these issues, but it's also one set. Professor's office, which makes it a lot easier to sort of just in that space.
And a two-cast character,
two-cast members, and it's just smaller, so I don't have to deal with all the bells and whistles of putting on a big show. It's just one set piece, and I just love that little space. Like, we usually use it for rehearsals, but it's so small and intimate. It allows. My thing that I always say is, like, you can't fake it from this close. You got to bring the goods. It's this really small theater that allows you to be really intimate with the performers. And so
Who's in the cast? Do they bring it?
Yeah, it's Brian Crowder, and who used to actually be on staff. Used to be the finance person, and Erica Berggren. She's only done one thing for us before, which is The Winter Bear, which is a touring show that deals with suicide. It's been great. I've very much appreciated there, especially considering the time amount we had. We only had a month to put this up because I had just gotten out of the director for Star, and I'm going into our town rehearsal. So this was like the only slot I had, and they've been troopers. We last night sort of put all the technical elements together, and I was like, hey, there it is. We got a show. So I'm excited to get one more crack at it tonight before we open tomorrow. I'm really happy with the progress. It's been really interesting being on the other side. Usually I'm trying my best to tell the director's story, but now to be able to like have that freedom of creating and shaping the story myself has been really, it's been great. The producing side has been a little more difficult because I'm out there, I'm like doing these things and putting posters out and getting like finding props in the basement of the theater. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I'm proud of the work that they've done, and I feel like people are going to enjoy it.
Your directing debut. What do you like about these types of shows on the black box stage with a kind of short run? Does it provide any unique opportunities for actors?
That's sort of the reason that I've been sort of championing this project for a few years now. I felt like there was just one sort of crack at being on stage at Perseverance. It used to just be like the main stage show. So if you didn't get in a main stage show, then that was your opportunity for the year and it was missed. But what I felt like these shows, which we used to have the second stage, what these shows do is they allow younger sort of actors or actors that are greener to sort of cut their teeth and be able to work in another situation, a smaller situation, before they make like that step to the main stage. So it allows opportunities for more sort of younger actors to get that other notch on their belt and get that experience, which I think that's really true for this show. That's how you get better, right? You just keep doing it. I feel like I've been very fortunate that I've just been able to grow as an actor because I keep having the opportunity to keep acting,
Well, it sounds like a super interesting play and a great opportunity for you as well.
Yeah,
and the actors involved. Oleana opens tomorrow, Thursday, runs through the weekend. More information and tickets available online at ptalaska.org.
Right.
What else is going on over there? Across the water.
we're gearing up to go into our town. So Tuesday is is open rehearsal or our first rehearsal, which we're really excited about, you know, going into our 40th season, which is crazy. I've been part of, and
40.
Even for me, I've been you know, working with Perseverance since 2006. So to think that it's been that long, you know, it just kind of, you know, brings it all together. Yeah, 40 years. So we have some new staff members we brought on board, which have been great. Actually, Shelley Wright, who is a new person running the costume shop, helped me out with costumes for this. We have a new production person, Cameron, who actually used to be one of our interns, and now he's sort of on staff. So it's great to see people that used to work for the theater coming back, wanting to help us out. It's been very, very positive. We're very fortunate to have, you know, the support of Juno and all you know, everybody that gets behind Perseverance. It's been great to see that, you know, especially with all this, everything that went down with the theater. Mm-hmm. It's been nice to have people just come out of the blue and say, you know, we're behind you. You know, we really appreciate the work you do over there. And that's been seriously warms my heart.
Me as well. I was worried there for a while, but yeah. I kind of knew.
Everything's great. We're back, guys.
Yeah, we're back. I knew Juno would pull through, and I'm glad. And, of course, having Julie over there, too, and always
Julie.
Communicating with us as
Julie's
well.
Yeah, Julie's been great.
Julie Copen's new outreach person, and mm-hmm. she's been doing a great job, too.
Yeah.
So, great. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just want to remind people, ptalaska.org. The number there is 364-2421. And if you just go under Juno on our webpage, the little Oleana little drops down, so you can just buy tickets online if you want. It's $20 for adults, $15 for students and seniors.
And so. Oleana was the title of the play was inspired by a song, right?
Correct. It was a Nordic song. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a weird Nordic song called Oleana to play for your outro, Enrique. Thanks for that tip.
Yeah, no worries.
All right, thanks for being here.
Yeah. Ule, 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 Anna. Ule, 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 Anna. I ule, Anna, der får jeg jo for håret hintet av jorden vokse korne, og det går svinte. Ule, 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 Anna. Ule, 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 Anna. Og kornet det tresker seg selv opp på låven min, men ligger jeg og hviler meg i koven. Eier så godt som har nyttebord kan brygge, det rister i bekkene til fattig mannens skygge. Ole, ole, ho, ole, ho, ole, Anna. Ole, 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 ho, ole, Anna. Og laksen med dem springer så lystig i bekke, selv i grydene og rober dem skal dekke. Og brunstekte griser, de løver om så flinke, say hey.
Greta. Hule, 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 Anna. Hule, 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 Anna. I hule, Anna, langt eller vil jeg i verden lenger i Norge min slavelenke bære. Hule, 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 Anna. 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 Hule, 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 Anna.
Support comes from Northland Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and to prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services, located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
At the APK presents U.S. Poet Laureate Tracy K. Smith and Alaska State Writer Laureate Ernestine Hayes for an evening of poetry on August 29th. Meet the laureates at a reception starting at 5 p.m. Enjoy a poetry reading and discussion at 6 p.m. and receive a copy of the new poetry anthology, American Journal 50 Poems for Our Time. Hope to see you at the APK on Wednesday, August 29th.
It's 21 minutes after the hour. This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are Justin Jones and Will Cronick, here to talk about Boys Run. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
And Boys Run has a Tlingit name. Would one of you like to pronounce it for me?
Itu-Hlatzin. Means strengthen your spirit.
Excellent. This is an event put on by AWARE and Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. And you guys are both from Central Council, so can you, one of you or both of you, briefly describe what it is they do and what you do there?
Sure. So AWARE is the lead administrative partner on Boys Run Itu-Hlatzin. They do the paperwork. They make sure that all the coaches are trained and have the materials. And we work with them in recruiting coaches and in recruiting students and instilling the cultural-based curriculum with some weight and with some help from educators and elders who know a lot more about culturally based education than we do.
So Boys Run is more than just a run. It's described as an empowerment program for boys around grade school age. Would you say more about what that is, what it means?
So last year we worked with third through fifth graders, and in a two-hour time frame, you know, we greet the students, have a healthy snack, and then jump right into the lesson. And we're talking about how to use words to express our feelings, how to get along with each other, strengthen our community, what's it mean to be a team member, and how can you help your friends at school. And then the next part is, you know, getting outside, exploring Juneau. So for us, it was really having them do different trails around town. And so the running component, yes, is a major part of it, but isn't the entire thing. You know, it's having that connection with the students and getting them connected to one another, and then using running as a way to really just be active and bring it together.
So every lesson has sort of an indoor and an outdoor component, or are some of them indoor, some of them outdoor? How's that all work?
We made it work both ways. We did it in the fall. So, I mean, really, when it's nice outside, you get outside and we, you know, run to the Whale or check out Perseverance or what's new downtown. And then using Harborview Gym, you know, running laps or playing games in there. So really just trying to see where the interests are. You know, I think we loved going to Cope Park. So we'd go to Cope Park and play on the spinning toys there and, you know, play zombie tag in the woods. But, I mean, find ways to keep it active and fun, and then use the gym to have a little focused and a little more lesson-based games.
What are some of the lessons like? Can you describe one or two?
So each lesson is based on one of the traditional tribal values that were created in an elders conference in the early 2000s. And so, for instance, one of the values is holding each other up. So students would talk about how they hold up their friends at school, and then we'd have an activity of tag where they would literally have to hold each other up. And we tried to make that fun, interactive, but also illustrate what the value is and how they can use that at home and at school.
Then we had one where we're looking at stereotypes, you know, looking at media and looking at Fred Meyer ads or different toy ads. And, okay, who is this targeting? What's that mean? Do you think it's true? How does this make you feel when you see this? And so really getting them to think about who are they and what's their identity like, and then how's the media portray that, and, okay, have that conversation with them and really begin to have them starting that conversation in a safe place.
That's really interesting. How did they respond to that?
You definitely tell, you know, they go, oh, well, this one has lots of blue colors and it's trucks and it has all the boys in the picture. Then you go to the girls' ads and it's pink and it's princess. And it's like, hey, well, do you think all boys like trucks? And, you know, you kind of get a feel for it and they, you know, shake their heads and, well, no. And like, okay, well, why do you think they do that? And is that fair? And so you really started to see them question that and go, well, that doesn't make too much sense to me. So it was a really cool moment to have them themselves understand their ideas on that and begin to express that and go, oh, well, that doesn't make any sense. Or how else could we make these ads more universal? And so I think that was a cool lesson where you really had the young men figuring out what do they read and the world around them and how they fit into that.
I'd like to ask a little bit about the background of Boys Run. How many have there been put on, or how long has it been going on? How did AWARE and the Central Council kind of create this event?
So Central Council is a new partner. We started working with them, I believe, about a year and a half ago. And so AWARE started this process a few years before that. I don't want to speak too much about it because it was their process. But basically, there was a program for girls called Girls on the Run. Mm-hmm. And people were asking, okay, what's a good program for boys? And they wanted something that would be fun but also be cultural and place-based that could help boys grow into strong young men.
And so was this sort of created by both of the two organizations working jointly? Is it like a national thing?
It's a local program that was developed by many different people. We weren't a part of that process. It was developed before we started, but there were both Native and non-Native people involved in creating the curriculum.
What motivates both of you to participate? How long have you been a part of Boys Run?
We co-coached last year with the Tlingit Culture Language Literacy Group at Harborview, and my interest started with running. That's my background. I ran, you know, elementary through high school and in college, and so I really wanted to have students connect to that exercise component, being physically active. And then I think once I realized early on, it's a lot more than running, and finding that connection with students and making them feel safe at school and a part of a bigger community. So I think it started with running for me, but then understanding that as a mentor, how can I give back to the community? So that was really a huge motivation, was being able to be in the classroom and have that connection with that many students.
How about you, Will?
I agree. I think it's a great opportunity to work with students to grow. One of the examples that really stuck out in my head from last year was one young man had a really hard time running in the 5K. It took him much longer than all the other students, and they all ran his last laps with him. They all held him up, and I think that's why I'm coming back, is seeing that they learned the values and the lessons that we talked about, and that it wasn't about who was first, but making sure that everybody was able to finish the 5K.
Did you see a big difference from the boys from like day one to the end of the 5K?
I'd say running-wise, those first couple days, like, okay, let's go outside and run. And like, well, how far are we going? Or really, you know, we have to go that far? Yes, let's, you know, keep going. And you begin to like, well, I'll race you to Mr. Will and I'll race you to the whale. And you begin to have to do that less as the season progresses. I think that was, for me, super encouraging. It's like, okay, they love going outside and exploring. And we found a way to connect them to positive physical activity, getting them to Cope Park and burning their energy there. And, you know, you're inside for so long and you just want to move and play. And so that was cool to see them find a healthy route to go with that. And I think, too, like Will said, you know, they definitely came from different classrooms, different walks of life, but you get them as a team. And we talk about holding each other up and working as one. And like Will talked about with that 5K, you really saw that happen right then and there, of really supporting one another and checking in as they ran. Like, hey, how are you doing? Do you need someone to run with you? So that 5K, I think, really was a good show of the growth they made in, you know, the 3-4 months that we were together, to see them connect with one another and really find that one value of working together.
So training for this time around begins September 18th, or maybe I should say lessons begin September 18th, and the 5K is December 8th. Do you guys have any need for more coaches, more volunteers, or are you just encouraging participants to sign up now?
Both. absolutely, we can always use more coaches and more athletes as well to run. We can always have more participants. It's always exciting to have a big 5K at the end and have a really big celebration.
And that's the big thing, too. That 5K was amazing. We did it in the Diamond Park Fieldhouse, and just having the community members and family and friends and teachers all in that one building. So I think that 5K is a huge, super cool event to have, you know, spectators come to, and then understand that, you know, we are looking for volunteers to come help out wherever they can, whenever they can, with programming, because, I mean, Will and I can't be everywhere. So just trying to find the help to really be involved. And I know some hesitancy comes in, like, well, I'm not a runner, or I don't like to run, but understanding that it's a smaller component of the bigger picture. And running, I think Will and I can do, but it's also, you know, having the energy and the motivation to come work with students and really just help them grow. That's the main thing that we're looking for.
Boys Run, or Itu Klatsin, has a fantastic website, boysrun.org. Is that a good place to register and get more information?
Yes.
Cool. I liked it. I enjoyed checking it out today. Justin Jones and Will Cronick from Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, thank you so much for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I just wanted to say again, this was definitely a partnership and a we effort with AWARE. We really worked together to make sure that this was a success, and with them, it couldn't have been possible.
Well, good luck with the lessons and the trainings and the running. And if you guys want to come back and tell us, promote the 5K in a couple of months, we'd be glad to have you. Thanks for being here today.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
It's just about 25 minutes to the top of the hour. You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is here representing Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Welcome to the show, Lee Kadinger.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Just briefly, for those who don't know, what is the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and what is your role there?
Sure. So Sea Alaska Heritage is a nonprofit organization, and we focus on everything from education to cultural integration to arts programs, scholarship programs, and also have a rather large retail store downstairs.
Beautiful store.
Most beautiful in Southeast. That's what we like to think. But my role at Sea Alaska Heritage, which was formed in 1980, is Chief Operating Officer.
All right. Well, thanks for being here today. And you're here to talk about the public ceremony to unveil three bronze house posts. Before we talk about all those, what are house posts? How are they used?
Sure. Well, we call these house posts, but I suppose not exactly a house post, if you will. So they could be called a miniature totem, but insofar as a house post, they would have been the main pillars that originally held up a clan house.
And those are carved usually with
Correct.
Some sort of depiction of maybe like a story or a character or something related to the culture of the builders.
Related to the clan or the specific house.
Excellent. And are they customarily made of bronze?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, that came about, Sea Alaska Heritage replaced the Gadjahit totem poles over across from Central Council Building. Those two totem poles were deteriorating, as you know, wood does. Mm-hmm. So we replaced those some years ago, and we thought with the ones outside the Walter Soboloff Building, just what can we do maybe a little bit more contemporary, and what can we do that's going to last for generations? And we thought moving to having them done in wood and then casting them in bronze, so each of these will weigh approximately 1,000 pounds.
Wow.
And, you know, no different than the European bronzes that have been there for 500 to 800 years or more. Mm-hmm. These bronzes are going to be there for 500 or more. So it's pretty exciting for us to be able to work in this new medium and to be able to have these bronze pieces displayed out in front of the building.
And these bronze posts, they have a wooden component as well. So were there two of each carved?
So they have one. Every one was carved out of wood. So there's three pieces, a Tlingit, a Haida, a Tsimshian. So there's three original wood carved pieces.
Okay.
And then each of those pieces had a replica made out of bronze.
Excellent. Okay. Now I understand. Cool. Okay. Well, we'll get back to that. But these posts, they have been described as exquisite and stunning. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute President Rosita Worrell stated that she couldn't believe what she saw. The pieces exceeded her hopes and expectations. So who are these master artists responsible for the amazing creations?
Sure. So the Haida artist is T.J. Young, and he and his brother Joe worked on this piece, and it depicts Wasgo, which is the story of a supernatural figure in the Haida culture known for having the power to successfully hunt killer whales. And so T.J. Young decided to depict that traditional Haida story. And Stephen Jackson, he's the son of Nathan Jackson. And Stephen did a more contemporary design, if you will. And his post depicts a mother's passage of Raven into the human world. And as he says, reminds us of women's ability to connect us to the power of the natural and supernatural, to the power of the sun, to generations past and future. So his piece is, you'll notice, is very different than the other two, mm-hmm. but just absolutely stunning.
And the third?
And the third is David R. Boxley. He's the son of David A. Boxley, a very famous Tsimshian carver. David R. also did the design of worked on the design of the house front at Sea Alaska Heritage. So David R. did the design, and what his is of his house post is depicts Raven, the mythical hero of Tsimshian stories, and it Raven is the main figure in the piece, and then above him are four human figures that represent what David calls the Frey trees.
And I was lucky enough to get a sneak peek of the photos, so that was really exciting for me. Thank you for sharing the pictures, and they truly are extraordinary. They are just incredibly beautiful to look at and just really visually interesting. What's the significance of these works for Sea Alaska Heritage? What are you hoping it's going to bring to, you know, your organization and your physical location?
So in addition to, I guess, the significance of these works for Sea Alaska Heritage, we see it as significance of these works for Juneau as Alaska's capital city, and continuing to integrate Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian culture into our community. That's one thing we don't, you know, we see that there's a need for more Northwest Coast art in our community. If you go to a community like Santa Fe, where you see all types of indigenous artwork in the whole community, here you see it in some small areas, and so we see this as a contribution to continue to educate the community on Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian culture. So,
well, I think you've made the right choice there. So we were talking before about how there is a bronze cast made of the wooden carved post, and you were telling me that the wooden posts will be are in the process of being painted. Some of them have been painted and some of them are still yet to be painted. So tell me a little bit more about that and how we can get a look.
Sure. So the painting of the pieces will follow the ceremony. And so on Monday and Tuesday of this coming week, the artist David and TJ will be painting the pieces at Sea Alaska Heritage. There's a kind of carving space, exterior carving space along the Seward Street side. So they'll be in there carving those two pieces on Monday and Tuesday. And Stephen's piece is already painted. The wooden pieces will be unveiled after the bronze pieces.
The ceremony to reveal the posts will be held at 1:30 p.m. this Sunday. That's August 26th. Where will the ceremony take place? It's down at the Sobolev Building. Remind us where that is. What's the address?
Sure. So we have a road closure. So we'll be doing a road closure of Seward Street. There'll be chairs set out. The weather calls for sun, so we need to knock on wood not to.
That's not wood. I'm sorry to tell you.
But calling for sun. So if that continues, we'll have chairs out on the street and we'll have some tents set up as well. But if, you know, it's raining, then we'll have a plan B. So it will be right in front of Sea Alaska Heritage Building. There'll be a stage set up there as well. You won't be able to miss it. Right on the corner of Front and Seward Street is where the pieces will go.
And I understand it will also be broadcast live on Sea Alaska Heritage Facebook page for those who can't come down in person. And the ceremony is free and open to the public?
Yep, the ceremony is free and open to the public. It'll be Facebook Live. Really, it kind of helps contribute to our vision of Juneau as a Northwest Coast art capital of the world. And furthermore, of having a Native art campus, if you will. We really have some great ideas in the coming years to continue adding. This is only a small part of building that Native art campus between Sea Alaska and Sea Alaska Heritage. So,
well, again, the pieces are really spectacular, and as far as I can tell, there weren't any other photos online apart from just like a little thumbnail.
A teaser.
So you'll have to come down and see them in person this Sunday, 1:30 p.m. downtown, Sea Alaska Heritage Building. Where will all of these ultimately be displayed?
So these are going to be on the corner of Front and Seward is where the bronzes will be. And the wooden pieces will go on the Egan Drive side of Sea Alaska Building and will be displayed there in the future.
That's great. I can't wait to see them in person. Lee Katinger, thank you so much for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add or mention that while you're here?
I think that's pretty much about it. If you haven't liked us on Facebook, please, most of you have Facebook, go to the Facebook, like Sea Alaska Heritage. You'll get all these updates. You'll be able to see some of the sneak peeks. If you're not able to make it downtown, you'll be able to watch the ceremony on Facebook Live. And if you need any other information, go to www.sealaskaheritage.org.
I was just about to say that. All right. Thanks so much for being here, and have a great ceremony this Sunday.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. In the Canadian province of British Columbia, there are two distinct subspecies of Swainson's thrush nesting there each summer. The russet-backed thrushes migrate south through the Pacific region to winter in Central America. The olive-backed thrushes migrate southeast to Florida and nearby states before flying on to South America. Where the two kinds of thrushes overlap, sometimes they interbreed. When these mixed offspring migrate, they take a variety of routes. Some zigzag west and east while heading south. Others take mom's migratory route in the fall and dad's in the spring, or vice versa. Some will even go right down the middle. Scientists have long known that heredity helps shape migration routes. But researchers using new DNA techniques have shown that a set of about 60 genes on a single chromosome is responsible for the different migratory patterns. Any changes within this gene cluster can produce widely different migratory patterns and may influence the evolution of new species. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Sasquatch Books, announcing BirdNote, the book, full of illustrations and stories of 100 birds. More at sasquatchbooks.com.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council presents the 11th Annual Food Festival, Juno's much-loved end-of-season farmers market, celebrating local foods, crafts, and ways to practice sustainability. The Food Festival brings together farmers, harvesters, food makers, and Junoites hungry for sustenance and knowledge. Featured workshops will cover everything from bicycles to composting to sauerkraut. The Juno Food Festival, Saturday, August 25th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Jack, sponsored by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and here with me in the studio is the KTOO News Director, Jeremy Shea.
Hi.
It's like we never left.
Right.
We were right here last night giving you guys live coverage of our state house elections and other races, and now Jeremy's here to talk to us a little bit about, you know, day after.
Right. Yeah, so Andrew Kitchman's got a story in progress for some of this afternoon's or tonight's newscasts about voter turnout. And it did kind of jump out at me last night that the voter turnout in Juneau was especially high compared to some of the other districts around the state, like several thousand votes casts, whereas there's one on the other end. It was like a few hundred votes cast in a comparable state house election. And that was one of those surprise elections with Gabrielle Ledoux's district up in Anchorage around Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. So that's a nice sign for civic engagement in our area, that a lot of people did participate relatively. Just to recap, I'm sure you've heard this by now, but just in case, Mike Dunleavy, former state senator from Wasilla, secured the Republican nomination to run for governor. In our area here, Sarah Hannon won House District 33, the Democratic primary for that. That's the downtown Juneau, Douglas, Haynes, Skagway, Gustavus, Kluckwan district. And she's headed to the general election with independent Chris Diamond, who didn't have a primary last night as an independent. And then in the Valley, Andy Story won House District 34. It's the Mendenhall Valley, that Democratic primary. And she's headed to the general election against Jerry Nan Curvis, who is uncontested in the Republican primary.
Are there any races, and this is going beyond Juneau, but any races that have yet to be called, or have they all been called? I know there was a couple that were quite close.
I don't know the answer to that. I'm still a little bleary-eyed from last night. I know Nat Herz from Alaska's Energy Desk had some pretty interesting he had a short story, but it was an interesting story that published late last night and early this morning on some of the races where a lot of the surprises were statewide that I encourage you to take a look at.
All right. So I look forward to hearing from Andrew Kitchenman about what we do know so far about overall voter turnout for the state. And what else did you want our audience to think about today, Jeremy?
Yeah. So, last night with our live newscast, Shelley, you and I were on for a little over 2 hours, kind of tap dancing and calling some elections and following results. And we'd prepared a lot. And as a newsroom, we were trying a lot of new things. So I'm really interested, and other members of the newsroom are really interested in getting some feedback on what you, our audience, thought about last night's election coverage. And I'm especially interested in what medium you were following it through, particularly what medium. Were you watching the video stream on the web? Were you following Facebook and tuning in on with us that way? Or were you using the graphs on KTO.org without listening to us? Were you just listening to the audio and ignoring the web? Mm-hmm. Were you just following Twitter? Or were you at some kind of event where they had it on a screen or piped over the speakers? Or were you just by yourself? Just generally, I always appreciate constructive criticism. So you can let us know what you thought with an email through ktoo.org/contact. And there's a little form there, and if you pick newsroom and news tips, it'll get to us. You can tweet also if that's easier for you, and tag KTOO Pub Media on Twitter. At KTOO Pub Media is the newsroom account we use there. And we've got a couple more elections coming up, so hopefully what you tell us will inform what went well, what you liked, what you think we could do differently for our municipal elections in Juneau. That's some assembly seats and school board that's coming up October 2nd. So hopefully Shelley and I will be back for that.
Dream team.
Yeah.
I thought it went great last night myself.
And then, the general election, November 6th. So a couple more of these coming up this fall.
Do you have any – I don't know if our listeners are interested in this, but personally, do you have any analytics about how our feeds were received, how many views we had?
Right. So we don't really have like real-time or immediate tracking on the radio side. Those are pretty expensive surveys and things. Anecdotally, it sounded like a lot of people were listening to us on the radio, just interacting with people here and there. On the website, it's a little complicated. Our Facebook live feed, I think we had something like 700 viewers. You kind of get into the particular analytics, and it was something like average of 3 minutes, which doesn't sound like much, but I guess in the world of videos competing for your eyeballs on the web is pretty good.
Yeah. I thought there was a pretty good presence on social media as well. A lot of people were tweeting about it last night.
Oh, good.
And, we have a lot of people here to thank, too. It certainly wasn't just me and Jeremy, although Jeremy worked really hard to get some content together, but David Purdy helped us out a lot. Adeline Baxter and Jake Steinberg, they were out in the field, as well as Miko Wilson, who was out in the field and helped us with setup.
And Miko Wilson was still tweeting away at like 2 a.m. from the Division of Elections office over on Main Street.
And Aiden directed our video feed.
Yeah.
So we... it was a team effort, and we hope you liked it, and we would like to make it better for you next time. So please do provide us some feedback. You can go to ktoo.org, contact us. And what was the tag they should use, or the category?
So, on our contact form at ktoo.org, just pick newsroom and news tips, and that'll get to me and the rest of the newsroom. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, Jeremy, anything else you want to mention while you're in here?
I think that's it. I'm ready for a nice, restful night of sleep tonight.
Yeah, you and me both. All right, thanks for coming in and giving us that info.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thanks so much for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Scott Burton will be your host. The library will highlight the CBJ Day of Play, Service Animal Training, and a Harry Potter Party. We'll learn how to fly fish with Southeast Alaska Land Trust. Rock, or Raising Our Kids with Kindness, will outline programs for high school students, and we'll get the details of on Cancer Connections Beat the Odds running races on Saturday. Also, KTOO volunteer Ben Brown will report live from the Alaska State Fair. Oh, that sounds like fun. That's tomorrow, live at 3 on KTOO. Scott Burton is the producer, and I'm Wednesday's host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.